Eu...
For over 20 years, I've been inquisitive, learning and experimenting with different ways to leverage our greatest asset, our minds, to work for us rather than against us. Join me as I engage with these inspirational guests to provide you knowledge and insights to help you achieve more. This show is sponsored by Stellar Recruitment and inspired by our company purpose and why, which is inspiring growth and changing lives. Thanks very much for tuning in.
Well, we'll get into it, Phil. Appreciate you joining us here today. Obviously, we're great mates. We've known one another a long time, and I've had the benefit of sort of understanding or hearing your journey, and it goes back to pretty humble beginnings, really. I mean, I think immigrant parents from Italy didn't come across with an awful lot. You grew up in a fairly humble fashion, I think, up on the north side of Brisbane, and had a fairly humble start to, testament to you. I think a lot of people would look at what you've achieved and regard it to be a successful life. And for me, I regard that to be not just a business. I think as an individual, as a family member, I think you've got a fairly balanced approach to success. So certainly keen to understand some of the insights you've gleaned today with the listeners today. I'm sort of keen to understand your principles or formulas. You know, you're a fairly self-aware, driven, ambitious person, and you're systematic. You're always looking to replicate success and improve on things. So keen to understand that. But I guess I want to sort of start with the challenge. Well, you know, there's going to be plenty of good stuff we start with today. And, you know, you've been on a journey. We're all on journeys. And you know, for a long time, mate, I've seen you achieve so much. But the one thing that you and I talked about, and obviously you're well aware of, it's well documented, you're not shy about that, was your weight. You know, and maybe you could sort of talk to the listeners about what you got to and where you are now. And for me, from the outside looking in, you had all the willpower, you had all the intelligence, you had all the discipline, you had all the smarts, you had all the resources. There was nothing you didn't have at your disposal, but for some reason you couldn't crack it. But then you cracked it. So maybe we'll just sort of start with that journey around weight before we get into some questions around, I guess, your principles or philosophies around success.
Yeah, look, Sean, obviously thanks for having me, mate. It's great. Always like talking about it, and very rarely, let's kick off from the start, very rarely you're going to see anyone that's achieved any sort of success, and success is what it means to you, that hasn't gone through the pains and tribulations. So, and I mean that, you know, 98% of people that have achieved anything that somebody might look at as successful has always been a learning journey, and there's probably been a lot of stuff ups. I know that there has been with me, and weight's probably a good one to start with, because I was always a bit plumpish as a kid, but I was always very active and played tennis and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, and did martial arts and all the rest of it. But like good Italian parents, you know, they came here with nothing and were always working class. Food was one of the most important things. And where I'm going with that is the psychology of it. So there was always plenty of food. And even now to this day at 48, they're still trying to feed you every 2 seconds, because that to them is a sign of wealth. So it was a cultural thing. Yep, I was healthy. I wasn't overweight as a kid. I was chubby, but I wasn't overweight. You know, got super fit when I started a business. And then it went to shit then, you know, because the competing priorities. You can't work on personal, professional and family all at the same time and be best in field in all three is something I've come to grips with at 48. So my weight journey, I went all the way from, you know, weighing, say, 88, 90 kilos at 26 years of old age to blowing up to 167 kilos of weight. And my weight journey was a little bit different, which was probably the hindrance and why I was overweight for so long. My weight never stopped me from doing anything. And that's where the mindset and the resilience kicked in. And I put it this way, I didn't think it was stopping me do a lot of stuff. Like for argument's sake, you know, I had a boxing match at 167 kilos and people thought I was going to have a heart attack and I was fine. So as my doctor put it, and it's quote unquote, I kid you not, you're the fittest fat fuck I know. It's time to lose weight or you're just not going to wake up one day. And that was a crucial point around, you know, 2015, 2016, where it sort of come at me and said, you've got all the success in the world of what it is to you. You wanted enough money to do what you want. You're now exiting your business to give yourself more time. But where's the health plan? And the key learning for me was that, and it's something I talk about today, that health is first. It's the foundation. You know, you don't go building 10-story buildings and 20-story buildings without laying solid foundations. And I just never had that foundation. Yeah, I did well in business. Yeah, again, without its trials, obviously trials and tribulations, ups and downs, wins and losses, like anything. Same with family, plenty of stuff ups there and learning curves in the family area as well. But the one area that I was really failing in was my health, and weight was just a byproduct of that. And so the key for me going from 167 kilos down to 97 kilos is where I sit now at, 15% body fat and can always be leaner and trimmer, but, in a good space was mindset, but it was also resources. And it was about using the resources around me, and I just wasn't doing it. I had people like yourself. You used to offer to come and pick me up and go for a walk 3 times a week, and I'm grateful for it. Champion, lots of people in my journey of weight loss. And, and as my doctor said, you are the fittest fat fuck I know, but you're also one of the most knowledgeable. But he goes, you're just not applying. And I mean, a lot of messages transfer over, because I always talk about this, and I'm sure we'll get into it. My philosophies are templates, and a lot of them apply, and they have for me personally, professionally, and family. Same thing in business. You can have all the theories in the world. You can go to all the workshopping events and build your knowledge base in your library, but if you don't execute, it just doesn't happen. And that was me. But in terms of weight, I had all the knowledge, I had the resources around me, but I just wasn't executing. And that was the crunch point. 2017, I exited my business in 30 June, and I said, that's it. It's me first. I'm flipping the cycle, personal, professional, family, and it's going to be about me first, so that I can give my best to my family, and then I can have more energy for work. So, yeah, it was a five-year journey. What doesn't happen overnight, which was another thing. It's a lifestyle change. These are the key learnings out of my weight. It's gradual. Use the resources around you. One of the resources, I went and had stomach surgery, not because I ate too much. The problem was I didn't eat enough, but I dumped all in one meal, so I'd have no breakfast and lunch and load up at 10 o'clock at night when we finished in hospitality, and eat and go to bed. So my weight gain was gradual. I actually eat more now. And this was my story, because other people are overweight for different reasons. Some have got health reasons, and some have got lifestyle reasons, whatever it is. But, the key for me was, you've got to do the work. It's not just get the knowledge, you've got to execute. You've got to build a plan, and you've got to use the resources around you. And the moment I did that, it's paid off so far. And it's a constant, focus every day to make sure that, health and me come first, so that I can give my family and my work the best that it can get.
Credit to you. We might show the listeners, perhaps, if we can, an illustration before and after, with your consent, of course. But I think it's a wonderful illustration of, if you put the work in and have that desire and that intent and that willpower, and you execute, you can go from here to here. And that could be finance, it could be career, it could be relationships, it could be anything. Correct. You know what I mean? But it's having a plan, it's executing that plan, drawing on the resources around you, but being disciplined in that regard. And that's the transformation. So,
yeah.
Credit to you on that side of it. So, might just sort of drill down personally. I know that you're a pretty system, process orientated individual. So, at an individual level, what are the daily rituals or sort of routines or habits or practices that you do daily to try and optimize yourself?
And again, I'm always a work in progress, I call it. Because we all, sometimes it's like pruning a tree. You've got to prune the tree back to make it regrow. So, because the one thing I'm always talking about is, don't worry, I've got plenty of stuff ups and I'm not brilliant at anything. I just get back up and get going, quickly. But, it starts in the morning. I tend to wake up. I try and spend a good 5 minutes lying there planning the day ahead and getting in the right mindset in my head. It normally starts about 4:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock, depends what's happened the night before, but normally it's 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, off to the gym. So I loved getting into the gym early because I never used to. It used to always be in the afternoon, but it used to affect my training, and I'd make every excuse under the sun, whereas it's the first thing I get done in the morning. And the other thing I learned there, it doesn't matter if it doesn't have to be an hour. Normally it is an hour, but even if it's 30 minutes, get up, do something. Now, I've got two gyms at home. I've got a boxing gym and a proper gym. I don't train at home because I found that the act of actually getting up, getting dressed, heading out, that is good for me and my mindset. So I'm off to the gym. That's Monday to Friday. I come back. I get ready for work, and I always take one of the kids to school. That's, to me, where the family part kicks in. So obviously I kick off personally with me, get me right first. Then the family part kicks in 95% of the time, unless I've got an early morning start for, doing a presentation or breakfast or something, or I'm away for work. I take either my daughter or my son to school. We had a great conversation in the car this morning. It was all about colognes and how my 14-year-old boy's into colognes and wants to start a business. And I said, you better get a job, because I didn't know colognes could be $400 or $500 each. so this morning it was all about that and fragrances and top notes and all the rest of it. So I had that quality time, you know, so that's the family part. And then I'm off to work. I'm normally into work by 7:30, 8 o'clock at the latest. I try not to put any meetings until 9 in the morning to just, you know, do that grounding. And at work, I've cut my, you know, some of the tips I've started with this year is meetings are normally now 30 minutes or 45 minutes, and I leave breaks in between so that I'm not going back to back. It's something that I really do. I've got a bit of OCD, so I've got to clear up my emails pretty quickly, and I don't, you know, and I box them off, and that's the way I try and run my brain as well. And, you know, on a good day, I'm normally home by 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I like cooking dinner for the family. You know, good Italian upbringing, and try and keep it as healthy as possible. And thanks to COVID, the upside of COVID was we all have dinner together most nights, unless the kids are off doing different things. So you see the pattern there. And then at the end of the night before I'm off to bed, normally by 8:30, I do a bit of meditation, or I do a bit of clearing and sit back and look at what the day was. I'm strategy, marketing, branding. I'm a very visual person. Yes. So for me, I've got to liken things to things. So, you know, like, you know, I've got to assimilate it. I've got to use analogies. I do that in business when I'm talking. So I do that with myself now, is to say, well, hang on, you know, it's not about the weight loss. The weight loss is the byproduct. It's how healthy do I want to be? What lifestyle choices do I want to make? You know, are we going to eat bad food? Of course we are. You know, like, you can't kid yourself. But, you know, you don't put bad petrol in your car all the time, you know, so otherwise your car doesn't run, and there goes the analogy stuff, right? So I adopt that. But that's usually a fairly good day. Weekends, you know, with the family, have it catching up with friends. We try and keep Sundays free, so we have a bit of that grounding time, you know, and downtime. You know, but again, you've got to have the resources to do it. It's this, you know, because I can tell you, if you asked me this question 12 years ago, the answer would be completely different. And but what was the byproduct? Well, I was traveling 3 weeks a month. I was 70 kilos overweight. My wife wanted to divorce me. You know, it was a train wreck waiting to happen 12 years ago. So, you know, as they say, what you can't always keep up. What goes up comes down, and what's down, if you turn it around, can go up. So it is a work. I think we're all work in progresses, and I think we really need to understand that. And for a long time there, I was very hard on myself, especially with my weight, and it just got me in the wrong mindset. And so the one thing I've, if you said, give me that silver bullet, give me that secret sauce, whatever the bullshit terminology is these days, mate, it's mindset. It really is. That self-talk is just so important. And until you put it to the test, you don't know how important it is, how your body reacts to the way that you talk to itself. And I'd love to share this quick story. We just got back from Italy, and we were on our way from Milan in a beautiful, you know, private chauffeur Mercedes to Lake Como. And if anyone's done that road, it's a pretty horrific, like, it's pretty, especially someone like me who suffers, you know, motion sickness, as you know, different situations we've been in. But on the way there, I just kept saying, I'm going to get sick, I'm going to get sick, I'm going to get sick. And guess what? I was sick as anything. Now, 4 days later, when we're coming back to Milan, you know, my first reaction was, oh, I'm going to get sick. And then I went, no, stuff this. You talk about this all the time, a mindset. And I went, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. Look how beautiful it is. We're on our way home. It's been an amazing holiday. Look at the family. And I constantly kept talking to myself for 2 hours, 2 hour ride. And I'm talking to myself going, how wonderful is this? How grateful am I? And guess what? No car sickness whatsoever, not even an inkling. And it was the identical road on the way back. And even my wife was worried. And she said, why did you not get sick this time? And I said, she goes, I said, did you notice I was very quiet in the car? She said, yeah, very. I said, but I was kept talking to myself. So, you know, it's true. There's plenty of research out there that'll tell you your body does what your brain tells it. Dr. Joe Dispenza is a great resource for that. As you know, I've shared that with you many times. You know, so our mindset is the secret sauce, guys, in personal, professional, family. You know, it starts and finishes with mindset.
You know, great example there. And you sort of touched on a few things there, you know, as we transcend into the family context, Phil, but talk about sort of those rituals. You talk about, you know, driving each day in the car with one child, get that quality one-on-one time. Great example there with Ali this morning. You talk about things like having dinner together, you know, which is important. You talk about things like clearing Sunday for a bit of downtime, chill, connecting time with the family. there any other sort of rituals or practices you have with Gianna, you know, just the two of you, or, you know, other practices or frameworks? I know you're big about taking school holidays off. You worked hard to be in that position where you can take school holidays off. Anything else you can share in terms of what, you know, binds you guys together and sets yourself up for success? Because like you said, pretty honestly, you know, 12 years ago, Gianna was about done. She was just had a gutful of what was going on. So you've gone from a pretty bad place to, you know, what sounds to be a pretty good place. What else can you share in terms of those structures and places at a family level?
Yeah, look, as I said, we're always a work in progress, right? So the one at the moment, we're very good. I take school holidays off, so I set up that environment. We've obviously done well in business, so we've got the resource to go on holidays. And, you know, if it's not down the Gold Coast, it's not always fancy overseas trips. We didn't go, last year we went twice overseas, but before that we hadn't gone anywhere for 4 years. Doesn't matter where you're going, it's the moments that matter. But the rituals on those moments is obviously always spending time as a family. And if we go away with groups, to still make sure that if you're away for 4 weeks, that you spend at least 1 week on your, you know, the four of us alone. We always sit down at dinner when we're away and talk. We let the kids be, we always talk about what's been the highlight so far and why. We'll do that when we're changing destinations. But for me, the one I need to work on this year that's on my goals list is obviously we get caught up with and that's why I said no one's perfect. We're always a work in progress, but we've got to do the work, and that's what I've got to focus on, is what we've slipped a little bit in the last 12 months is just like me and Jana having a date night, you know, monthly. So we both put that on our goals list this year to be better at that because obviously with kids in, well, now grade 11 and grade 9 and setting up a new business in the last 3 years, it's been all about it, you know, and touch wood, our relationship's great and strong, but there obviously, you know, there's still parts that we've got to improve on. And as I always say, do you ever achieve greatness? Probably not. It's always a journey. It's good to great, as Jim Collins says, in business, but you apply that on a personal level and a family level. You've got to have the resources. Like, one of the key messages out of it is, you know, you've got to remember, I started in 2002 and, you know, it's now 2024 and there's still things I've got to get better at. And that's 22 years later. You know, yeah, I've been able to fix a lot of things and improve, let's say, on a lot of things, but I've still got things I've got to get better at and improve 22 years later. And that's something that we've just got to be mindful of, that it is a journey. Doesn't mean it gets an excuse and we do nothing, because excuses get nothing completed. But, you know, there are things that we need to get better at. But a key one for me, if you said give us the real clear takeaway, and we do it with the kids as well, is goals list. So as a family, we have a shared goal list. So we have our personal, professional and family. We set up goals on our notes, and then we share the folder amongst all four of us. So I know Jana's, Anika's and Ali's. They know everybody else is in the family and vice versa, et cetera. What are their goals, personally, professional, family? So we can check in on each other, but we can also help each other where possible. So we set that up as a shared folder on our notes on Apple, and that's a really good ritual that we do, and we touch base with each other regularly on that and say, how's it going? And it keeps everyone engaged with each other, and it keeps everyone supporting each other as well. Where if I know Ali's into colognes at the moment, wants to build his own cologne. So, you know, he's doing a course this coming week on it. So we do stuff like that, and Anika wants to get back into her dancing, so we help her with that. You know, so just little things like that, and keeping each other accountable and supported through it.
Love some of those structures, mate. I've been writing down a few as we've been talking, so good reminders. Sometimes you sort of forget about the obvious sort of things, but there's some really good stuff there and really simple at the end of the day, which is great. But
as I guess, say, life is pretty simple. It's just humans complicate it.
Absolutely. So keen to understand how you wrestle ambition and competing priorities, right? So we talk about three aspects. So we talk about personal, family and business, and as you touched on at the start, some of them, you know, conflict on one another. It's hard to do all three well, really well, all at the same time. It's a battle. They're competing for, you know, our attention, our priorities, our resources. But, I mean, how do you deal with competing priorities? What's your sort of tips in that regard?
Well, look, it starts with the vision. So, to me, it starts with the goals. You've got to map them down. We call them goals, outcomes, key performance indexes, whatever it is, objectives, focuses. They're all the same thing, right? They're visions. So what's my vision personally? What's my vision professionally? What's my vision from a family perspective? So start with listing them. I call it goals. So I put my goals down for the year, and I put three or four things. Sometimes I might change. I might get it done, add to the list if they're quick. But it starts with that. So I've always got my roadmap. I've always got what my outcome is. So another word that I like instead of goals too is outcome. So what's my outcome for 2024 in terms of personal, family and business? I do that, And then I reverse engineer it and I start to build out the roadmap on what do I need? What are the resources around me that I need to achieve each one? You know, because having the vision there is one thing, but then what are the actual resources that I need? And then the time allocations to it, you know, because some things you can do quickly, some things are one-off, some things take longer. But it all starts with that. And then what I call is, and this is something that changed my life, and I do this a lot when I'm doing speaking gigs, and I'll say to people, you know, who's achieved work-life balance? And no one puts their hand up. Who's searching for work-life balance? And they all put their hand up. And I tell them, stop looking for it. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And they look at you really puzzled. And I'm going to give the listeners a very simple formula. We will never achieve work-life balance, because balance means applying 24 hours a day divided by 3, 8 hours personally, 8 hours professionally, and 8 hours family, and that's not possible. So I talk about, and remember we talked about the body does what the mind says. So if your mind's saying, I want balance, 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 your body's in a spin, which is what generates anxiety, because it's trying to achieve balance, but it's trying to achieve something that's not achievable. So the concept that I'd love the listeners to really absorb is work-life harmony. You've got to get all three areas of your life working harmoniously together. Mm-hmm. And you've heard me say this over the years. Back at 2002, when I was starting a business, professional had to be the number one priority. So I'd mark it. My outcome professionally is this. My priority is this. And now I couldn't do it at the time because I'm still learning. I've now learned 22 years later. But if I had to go back, this is how I would do it. In 2002, my outcome was to build a successful business to make enough money for me to have a good lifestyle. Priority one. I was dating Jana, I wasn't married, I didn't have kids, so family was a priority too. And three was me, the priority. Remember, I started fit and that's why I blew out later. Now, I can't give all those three areas. So what happened? Business started to boom. Family was good. Jana and I got married 2003, beautiful, everything was great. And I started to put on weight slowly because I couldn't give all three areas the 8 hours of the balance that it needed. Whereas if I went back and said, what would you do different? I'd still do the business. I'd still do what I did family, but I'd take a little bit more time for me personally so that the outcome wouldn't be the weight loss if I went back. Now, fast forward to 2024, you flip the model. My number one priority is my health, me. My number two priority is my family, and my number three is my business. But it's a different time of life. I've set up financially. I've got stability. I've had a good exit. So my environment, my lifestyle enables me to do that. So the key takeaway for the audience is harmony. Chase harmony, not balance. Map out what your outcomes and your priorities or your goals are for personally, professional, and family, and then prioritize which one needs it at the time. Because if you've got a sick family member, that might be number one priority. If you've got a startup business or expanding business or selling a business, whatever, that might be your number one priority. You know, if you've got to travel overseas for a month, that might be your number one. So, or if you've got personal issues or something going on, you might be it. So it's a different scenario for different people, but the template doesn't change. What are my key outcomes for each area? Write the word harmony. And then write down what is my number one priority, what's my number two priority, and what's my number three, and give them all some attention. Now, it won't be 8 hours, 8 hours, and 8 hours, but you can give it some attention. And that's the one thing I would have done differently in 2002 with my weight. Me personally, I would have spent more time being conscious of that.
Yeah, what's interesting, you sort of touched on a few things there, Phil. I mean, one of the things I was keen to do over summer was read a little bit more, get off technology, decompress, you know, open your eyes to different sort of philosophies. But the two books I managed to get through were, you know, fairly in line with what you talk about. So the first one was Matthew McConaughey's book, The Green Light.
Great book.
And then the second one was Arnold Schwarzenegger's book, Be Useful. So the simple takeaways from both books, there's some similarities there, is first be clear on your intentions. What am I looking to achieve, you know? And that could be as an individual, it could be an actor, it could be a weightlifter, it could be a governor, whatever it is. What am I looking to? Very clear on what I'm looking to achieve. And then it's that roadmap and that discipline and surrounding yourself with the resources of the people to achieve that outcome, right? So the first thing is you've got to be clear about what you want to achieve, because if you don't, life just passes you by and, you know, you're really no chance to arrive at where you want to go, because, yes, you haven't declared to yourself about where you want to go. So yeah. I think there's the stuff you sort of talk about, and I think the simple takeaway is just get clear. What's your vision for yourself individually as a partner in business, and then how do I get from here to here? And that's the gap, right? You know, and the practices and the rituals and the rest of it that get there, but just that awareness of where you want to go. Yeah. So yeah. It seems to be that you're constantly iterating, like all of us, mate, probably made many mistakes. You're learning from that. You're vulnerable to sort of quote someone through the talk today, but no doubt, you know, not everything you've done has been a screaming success, but you're very, very clear on what you want to achieve and how you want to turn up as an individual.
Well, it's a journey. One thing that I've used to summarize it is it's a journey, not a destination. Hmm. And for so long, I treated things as a destination.
Hmm.
Do this, and then we arrive here, and then we do this, and then we arrive here. I was even doing it on holidays. Not that we got that many holidays 10 years ago because it was too busy working, but when we did, it was, okay, now we're going to do this. It was like a tick and flick. And then the switch went off and said, hang on a minute. Let's slow this all down and let's understand that it's a journey. You know, let's enjoy the now. Yeah, you got to plan for the future. You got to look at the future and you got to keep looking forward. Because if you don't, you know, in a car, if you keep looking in the revision mirror, you're going to fucking crash. But you still got to look at the revision mirror, but you spend most of the time looking forward and where you are right now, right? So it's that combination. And know that not every day is going to be a happy day, but every day there's something to learn. And something we always talk about with our kids is, what's the message in this? You know, whether, and that could be a good thing or a bad. Good thing happens, what's the message in this? You know, what's the learning in this? Something bad happens, what's the learning in this? You know, and it's those trigger points to just remember that it all ties into, it's a journey, not a destination. You know, there's some really powerful stuff out there, common sense stuff where people talk about, you know, we work till we're six. Well, if you leave it to the government, they want you to work till you're 67. And then the average life expectancy is what, 80? So you're going to work all these years to live what, 15 years of your life, stuff that, you know, yeah, you got to work hard when you need to, but you got to, you know, you've got to also enjoy it. And that's why, as you know, my motto, you know, one of my number one go-tos is life is measured in moment. Is this moment going to be memorable? Is this moment memorable for me? Because if it is, then I'm doing it. And it doesn't matter what it is, because it can be a small thing. But is it going to be a memorable moment? Because at the end of the day, life's going to be that journey I talk about is a combination of all the different moments we have in our lives, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm keen to pick your brains on business now. We've talked a bit about you personally, obviously, and the family, which is great. Touched on a little bit in the business sense, but, you know, for context, obviously, hardworking role models as parents, you know, always working hard, always setting a standard, which is probably a key sort of learning point. I think your first sort of foray into business or commercial world maybe was at Sandgate High, where you implemented the vending machine initiative to raise funds for the school, perhaps. Yeah. So that was pretty novel and entrepreneurial at that stage, as a young fella.
Yeah.
Then you've gone on to where you are today, well-decorated, you know, successes in business, you know, most notably a very significant multi-million dollar exit for your core business at that point in time, which was Develop Coffee, further to a thousand different things you're doing at the moment. But what are your sort of core sort of philosophies when it comes to, or the fundamentals about being successful in business? What do you need to know when you simplify it in your experience?
Yeah, and it's a great question. And the beauty of doing lots of workshops and that's what we do now at the commune, right, is help people accelerate their potential. So three key elements, and a lot of everything cascades out of this. Number one, you got to be solving a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not solving a problem, then you might be, you know, one hit wonder and a small time success. If you want to be best in class, if you want to accelerate your success and your potential, you got to be solving a problem. At Develop Coffee, there was 2,000 coffee companies on the 2,000 different products on the market at the time. I wasn't selling coffee. I would have gone broke. The problem I was solving was helping cafe owners make money.
Mm-hmm.
So we honed in and said, we're going to help cafe owners make money. The way we get paid is by selling them coffee. They buy our coffee. They get this training support, you know, introduction to buying power, all this sort of stuff. And that accelerated our growth. The second is you've got to be so relevant that if you closed your doors today, people would struggle to find a replacement tomorrow. And that's a key one.
Mm-hmm.
So I challenge everybody listening in business. And I did that with Develop Coffee. Mm-hmm. I said, right, we're not, the problem we're going to solve is help cafe owners make money. How are we going to build a business so relevant that other people can't replicate what we're doing? And they need us more than what they need someone else. Because if they just need coffee, they can go to 2,000 places. Advice, help with their leases. They got to come to Develop Coffee because we are more relevant than anyone else. You know, and you think about it, we became the biggest in the country in our space, like for like, because we sat over here and very few people did what we did. And most people just sold coffee. When did I exit? I exited when people started to go, shit, I need to copy that model. And we were running out of problems to solve and people were catching up. But that's number two. And then number three, which is so, 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 so important, all three are, is when you get one and two right, the amount of people that do such a great job solving problems, they're relevant, but they just don't tell the story. You've got to be an exceptional marketer. Marketing is the art of telling a story so engaging that people choose you. So one, solve problems. Two, be more relevant than anybody else. And the context of that is if you close your doors, where are your customers going? So build strategies, build policies, build products, build services that others don't offer that you have because others can't go anywhere else then.
Yes.
And three, tell the story better and more engaging than anybody else.
Yeah, now some great philosophies once again. You know, flipping that on its head, Phil, where do you think people go wrong? Like, if they're good core fundamentals, they're pillars of success, you know, where do people often go wrong in your experience? You've seen a lot.
Poor planning. If you said just pick one sentence, poor planning. They don't plan. They don't plan what problem they're going to solve. I see people now, they come to me, I'm opening a cafe. Why? Oh, because I love the industry. That's great. But what problem are you solving? And so I use those questions straight back at people, right? So when I'm asking people that, the number one is poor planning. You know, they haven't planned on why they're going to open a cafe or what they're going to do different, how they're going to be more relevant, how they're going to tell their story. The other problem is people think it's their right because it's quite easy to open a business in Australia. In most instances, there's no regulation at all. In Italy, I can tell you now, if there's one cafe on a street and it's not full, they're not going to grant a license for another cafe to open up in the same street because they regulate it. Now, they don't over-regulate. They use common sense. Well, if this cafe is not full and there's no demand, the demand's not max, why would we grant another license and have two businesses failing? Right. Whereas in Australia, it's very easy. So there's you know, where we should have regulations, we don't, and where we shouldn't have regulations, we do, unfortunately. You know, but that's why people should be part of the change they want to see in the world, as Gandhi says. But it's that ability to just go, hey, come back to the model of three, problem, relevance, marketing. You know, people just say, oh, you're a guru with coffee. No, I know coffee well. There's plenty of people out there who know more about coffee than I do. Where I would say I'm a guru without saying I'm a guru is marketing in the industry of coffee. I have a commercial mindset. I know how to tell a story. I'm very strategic. They're my strengths. And I would never say that I'm best in class because I never am. Never the smartest person in a room, always learning. But they are my strengths, not so much coffee, even though coffee's a strength. But my trump strength is the fact that I know how to strategize, market, tell a story, and do it better than somebody else, right, in that. But I've got to have the material to do it. And the material to do it is what problem am I solving and how relevant am I to the industry? And that's why Coffee Commune now, fast forward, people are going, how did you build such a success already in 3 years? Because we followed the same model. You know, what problem are we solving? Well, we're helping everybody with all the problems I had in 2002. No startup cash, didn't have the facility, didn't have money for the equipment, didn't have buying power, didn't have education, didn't have knowledge, didn't have support, didn't have any advocacy. Bang, become part of the commune and you're up and running. You got a coffee brand in 24 hours ready to go. You know, what makes us more relevant? Well, no one's doing what we do in this country. No one has a coffee facility with no brand attached to it, like me. I don't have a coffee brand in market. Nobody has the ability where you can come and roast 1 kilo of coffee or thousands of kilos of coffee. You can do it yourself, or you can bring your own green beans, ingredients, and just use our equipment, or we can do it all for you. And they don't have the hospitality chamber of commerce like community all attached. So no one in this country has all three. Some have parts of it, but they don't have all three. That's our problem and relevance. And now the key is, and I'm training my team on, tell the story. How do we market this better than anybody else of what we can do and how we can help others? More importantly, how do we get other people to tell our story for us? But coming back, no long-winded answer, but the answer is in the success side, but in short, poor planning. You need to plan. Starting a business for me didn't start in 2002. It started back in 1993 when I worked for Brisbane's first, you know, cafe that roasted coffee. And I was there for 9 years. And in 9 years, I was learning everything what not to do in business. I was learning what the opportunities were. And then in 2002, I made that step. But the idea started in 93. So there's a lot of planning that's gone into that went into the success of DiBella Coffee.
Now, I love it. Great, simple philosophies. Which is really sort of get your head around and sort of grapple. So you touched on a couple of things. You touched on in terms of, you know, I want to sort of just go towards, you know, what are you working on at the moment? You're always working on something. You're a unfinished product like us all. I know that you're always sort of thinking, and when ideas come up, you sort of keen to pursue, you know, different ways of being. But you talked about things like slowing down. You talked about things like making more time for Princess Gigi and getting those dates going again, and all that stuff as a core foundation. Anything else at the moment that you're consciously working on to help you sort of get better in any facet of life?
Yeah, look, you know, the family and the health I'm doing more of, and a few things to tweak. The big one is the coffee commune professionally. I've put a COO in play now, and he's brilliant. He's been with me now for a year, and that's brilliant while I'm away. And what that is enabling me to do is work more as a BDM in my business and coach the team. But the big one that I'm tackling I'm not an advocacy agency, and we don't want to be, but I'm certainly advocating for our industry, because what I ask of local, state and federal government, and local does it quite well, unfortunately the Lord Mayor is very good at this, is we are hospitality experts. We are at the coalface. We have over 1,000 members part of the coffee commune, but we have a reach of over 30,000 people that are involved in this place in one way, shape or form. We want to be part of the decision making. And what I mean by that is, you know, when COVID was here, the Lord Mayor rang me and said, what can we do to help your industry? You know, and I said, rattled them straight off, you know, freeze permits, freeze outdoor dining permits, that is, freeze, you know, help with car parking. So any of the stuff that you can do, especially in a city with the licensing, now's not a time to be going around inspecting places for, you know, you still want them to be healthy and all the rest of it. But, you know, right now they're treading water. So there was a whole myriad of stuff, and the Lord Mayor went tick, 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 tick and put it into play. Peter Dutton at the time, he rang me. They were in government and said, what can we do to help your industry? And I said to him, well, the visa restrictions are killing people, 20 hours of visa restrictions. Can you lift that? Because we don't have access to workers. Let them work more hours. He did that straight away with the government at the time. And what we've seen of late, fast forward to 2024, local government is still involved with us. State and federal are nowhere to be seen, the current government. Lucky we've got a great relationship with the Queensland Small Business Commissioner, Dominic Lamb. She's fantastic. And I applaud the current Queensland government for putting her in that role, because she's brilliant and active with small business. But the short answer, I'm working. Some would say advocating. Some would say lobbying. Some would say being a pain in the ass. Whatever it is, but working on trying to make sure that we, before government makes decisions, it goes to industry and asks, are you going to help us or hinder us? Because their intention might be good, but their execution is often poor, because sitting behind a desk up in head office or wherever that is for state or federal government doesn't mean that you know what's going on at the coalface in industry. And you've got industry experts out there across all different industries. Use them. So one of the things I'm getting stuck into in 2024, and we kick off with the release of our small business paper that we took 6 months to commission, and we kick that off on 19th of February, is to go to market and make sure that, you know, we are helping people. The byproduct and the intention is to help the hospitality industry be sustainable, because at the moment we're seeing closures at the rate of knots, and we will continue to see that. And it's not government's fault. You know, the paper shows that. We're releasing the paper on the 19th, and the number one problem is actually operators. So I'm going to be getting stuck into making people be better operators. The second thing is helping people market their business, because that's the second problem. And then number three is all of the compliance and costs and the rest of it that go with running a business. So it's actually number three, not number one. So that demystifies a few things and gives you a bit of a tip to the listeners of what's in that small business paper. But again, all funded by us, not funded by government. We don't take government. We're not funded by government whatsoever. That's my focus for 2024, is to really get in there. And people say, why? It's a great question, because they say, you know, you've made your money, you're working school hours, you're running a good business, you've got a good team. I've given 20% of the company to the team so that they have an ownership in it and run it like it's theirs, which allows me to do stuff. My why is simple. I always come back to Gandhi's words, be part of the change you want to see in the world. I love this industry. I started in it at 14, 34 years ago, started washing dishes for my brother, learned how to cook, learned how to do lots of things, and ultimately went on to open many of my own businesses, not just here, but in America and India and China. And I want to see this industry sustainable. And it's not going to be sustainable if we don't get ahead of the curve. But, you know, the key one and one of the outcomes I'm looking for is I want all levels of government, no matter what side of government they sit in, to work with industry before they make decisions that affect people's lives. So I'm going to be getting stuck into that one this year.
No, good on you, mate. I mean, I think that advocacy work that you do, it's a fragmented industry. They don't have much of a voice, but I think through you they have more of a voice. And I think you also given them the tools, the education that you've spent 34 years developing, you're sort of trying to package that up to help them be successful. You know, a lot of these people have their livelihoods on the line. You know what I mean? It's the difference between making rent or paying the wages or paying their own mortgages and all that sort of stuff. So I applaud you for the work you're doing in that regard.
Some of the big wins, Sean, has actually been by stopping. I've in the last 3 years probably stopped about 100 people opening businesses. Not stopped physically, but the advice I've given them has made them go, hang on. To me, that's a win too, because out of that 100, 80 of them are probably going to fail, definitely fail. Right, because they couldn't come back to what problem am I going to solve, what's going to make me relevant, and had no idea about telling a story. Now, if you can't get any of those right, let alone one of them, you know, I don't want to see you in business. I don't want you mortgaging your house, you know, signing up to leases that you can't afford. That's not what I would want for any person. So sometimes success for us is talking people out of opening their own business, right?
Absolutely. It's certainly the right thing to do in a lot of cases. So one thing about you, Phil, there's not going to be a shade of grey. It's always going to be black and white, which everyone who knows you loves you for. So that's good. Mate, we might finish with a big one, just sort of wrapping up, respectful of your time. A psychologist and a coach once told me all you need in life is meaning and purpose and love and connection. You know, so that was sort of their formula for success, happiness, whatever you want to call it. You've done a lot of reflection. You've been a beneficiary of, you know, some great education, some great books, some great mentors. You've met with some amazing individuals globally. So what's your sort of mantra or, you know, key philosophies for happiness and success? And like you said, for different people, it's different things. It's not always this mega wealth or whatever the case is. But when you boil it all down, mate, what do you think your take is on nailing that?
Yeah, look, I love that question. And I will answer it in a way that everybody is going to get something from it. And it's a template I've built from all the things you just said, meeting extraordinary people from like Richard Branson. And it comes down to this, because I love the love and connection. I agree with that 100%. The one that sits above it, which is the top of my pyramid. So mine's a pyramid. And at the top, and non-negotiable, is health. So you've got to have your health. Because the meaningful relationships and purpose isn't going to happen if you don't have your health. So the one that trumps all of that to me is health. And this model, it doesn't matter what you want to achieve in life, this is the model that I can apply and share with everybody. So I think of a triangle, the top is health, non-negotiable. You're either healthy or you're not healthy. And if you're not, well, start with, if you know, you've got to go and get your tests done, right? When whatever it is, your full bloods every year or your full health clinic or whatever it is that you want to do, you got to go and see what your health situation is and get that in order and build your plan. The next two is time and money. So put them in any order you want, but they're both on the same realm. Now, the key to that time and money is enough time and enough money to do what you want when you want. To me, that's the winning trifecta, is the triangle. Health, non-negotiable. If you're healthy, then it's time and money. And I'll quantify it like this. If you like to play tennis, you need a lot less time than somebody that wants to play golf, because a game of tennis can be an hour. A game of golf, well, it's certainly not going to be an hour, right? So time is different to different people, but the concept's the same. Money. If you want to own the plane, you need a lot more money than somebody that wants to fly at the front of the plane, who needs more money than somebody who's happy to fly in economy, who needs more money than somebody that doesn't want to get on a plane at all. So it's something that I found so far, and I started talking about this last year, and it's been impactful, not only for me, but for many people, because that diagram doesn't lie, and it's applicable to all people. Health, non-negotiable, but time and money, enough time and money to do what you want when you want. And I'll finish on this. I had a few good people that I know pass away in 2023. One of them had plenty of money, plenty of time, died at 62, heart attack. Didn't drink, wasn't a bad eater, very healthy. Didn't have time, didn't have the health on their side. Never got tested for heart problems, bang, gone. Another person has got their health, has got plenty of money, but doesn't have time. Because they're traveling the world all the time. They don't see their wife. They see their wife every 14 days. There we go. Right. So to me, that might work for them. Doesn't work for me. Right. And there's a myriad of different examples that I can give you, but they all fit into that, call it paradigm. They fit into that diagram. That to me is the biggest takeaway of life. That's the trifecta.
I think you touched on some great stuff. you know, the word that keeps coming into my mind is the same word that keeps coming into my mind when I read Arnold Schwarzenegger's book and Matthew McConaughey's book. You're very intentional. You're very intentional. You're intentional about your health. You're intentional about what you want to achieve in all aspects of life. And then you reverse engineer that and you follow that with a plan. But you're a visual person, so no doubt attached to those intentions is a vision of the future, of what you want to achieve, how you want to turn up. And I think the thing that, you know, rung true to me when I read those books and listened to you talk is, if you're not intentional, life just passes you by. All of a sudden you're 48 and you're like, is this where I want to be? You know what I mean? You know, maybe you don't. We've lost some people, you know, good friends of ours, you know, in their 40s. You know, they don't get that chance to relive that time. You know what I mean? So I think reading those books, listening to you talk, I think the first thing and the primary thing is be intentional. Work out what you want to do, what you want to achieve, and then try and form a plan and surround yourself with people to support you on that plan. But I think, you know, that is the one overarching thing when I listen to you and I read these books. If you're not intentional, then life just passes you by. And you don't end up where you want to be. And sometimes, you know, that's taken away from us because, you know, health or other reasons, you know, that fall by the wayside. And you're fortunate that you've navigated your health, you've navigated your relationship with, you know, Gianna and the rest. You've come out the other side. But I dare say a lot of them, you're very intentional about this is wrong, this is broken, this is, you know, in a bad place. I need to change things. If I don't, you know, I could be dead, I could be divorced, I could be all that sort of stuff. That you've changed. So I think I urge the listeners to be intentional and reverse engineer and be clear on what you want to achieve and go after it.
Yeah, no, well said. And that comes back to my mantra, right? And because I talk in statements, be the best you can be. Yeah. You know, we all have bad, you know, 70,000 chats with ourselves a day, you know, on average, that is. It could be more at times. And, you know, we can all be hard on ourselves and we can be hard on others and we can be hard on our kids and hard on our workers and co-workers and all the rest of it. And I keep coming back to, be the best you can be. And then I flip it. Are they being the best that they can be? And if they're being the best that they can be and you're being the best that you can be, great. Get on it. Tomorrow better than today. So everyone talks, oh, you talk in riddles. No, I don't talk in riddles. I talk in statements because they are, come back to intention statements. So be the best you can be. Tomorrow better than today. You know, life is measured in moments. Intention is an underrated, underused word, my friend. You know, what are our intentions? What is somebody else's intention? As you said, I'm a black and white, straightforward person. And sometimes you upset people. And sometimes you upset people when your intention is not to upset them. You know, it's actually the opposite. And I'll say to people, look, I apologize that you've perceived it that way. That's not my intention. My intention wasn't to upset you. You know, my intention was X, Y, Z. Because I think the key too is that we don't have meaningful conversations all the time. You know, and we need to do that more, is meaningful conversations, you know, rather than the obligatory blah, 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 blah. How's your day? How are you going? What are you doing? Well, fucking hell. You know, like, ask, you know, what's the best thing that happened to you today? You know, if there's one thing that you would have done better today, what was it? That's a meaningful conversation that actually engages people and it engages you, you know, and I'll quote my wife on this one because she's drummed it into me 20 years marriage. If you can't improve on the silence, don't speak. But again, key takeaways there, my friend. Intention, you hit it on the head. You do it well with your podcasts. You know, when you have people on, you get the best out of them to share the story. You're not ticking and flicking. There's a message to be told in all of us. And can I finish with this? Because otherwise I'll talk all day and that's no good to you. The wealthiest place in the world is where?
Cemetery.
Correct. And I say, you know, because the good intentions die in the cemetery. People with I'm going to do, I was going to do is in the cemetery. There's a lot of wealth of knowledge that never gets shared, great experience, great wisdom, amazing wisdom that lies in that cemetery that hasn't been shared. And one of the things I love about what you're doing is you're telling people's story, you know, because one day I'm going to be under the ground too. And if we can share the stories and it helps somebody else, fantastic. It's not about me. It's about you.
Now, you've been really kind with your time, Phil. And I know, you know, through the in excess of 10 years we've known one another, you're passionate about helping people. You're so passionate about helping people. And I know that, you know, if I needed a hand, you'd be the first person to pick up the phone and you would do anything on any level to help me out. And I know that that's true of everyone in your network that you try and inspire and help. So good on you for leading from the front. Good on you for trying to help so many people. I know it's a big part of your vision, big part of your legacy. You inspire me and I'm really grateful that you've taken the time today to sort of share some of those practices and principles. And everyone have their own takeaway and interpretation of this conversation. But I think the overarching thing is, you know, don't live too late, chase your dreams, be intentional, you know, stick to the plan. If you work the plan, you know, you can achieve some wonderful stuff, and you're a great example of that. You're not flawless, because like all of us, we're not perfect. You know, your journey's been like this. You know, it might seem like that, but it's not. You're like everyone else, and you're constantly learning. So, mate, grateful to be a mate, grateful to take this time to have a chat, and grateful to share some of your story.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Thanks so much for tuning in. It means the world to me. If you got something of value out of the podcast, I'd love you to pay it forward and share it with anyone that might benefit. Thanks again for tuning in.